When you go through the supermarket with your grocery cart, every tube of toothpaste, every cereal box, can of soup, jar of jam, bottle of ketchup, and box of cookies is trying to say to you, "Buy me." It's part of the package's job to sell you on the product inside. Thomas Hein has written a new book on the design of packages. It's called The Total Package, The Evolution and Secret Meanings of Boxes, Bottles, Cans, and Tubes. Tom Hein is the author of the previous book, Populux, and he writes a syndicated column on architecture and design for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I have, in honor of your presence today, I have brought with me a bunch of cans and bottles and jars and tubes from my cabinets to talk to you about the packaging. Let's start with this. This is a can of Campbell's tomato soup. I actually bought this a while ago. I don't like tomato soup very much, and I don't know why I bought it, but this is probably from, it's probably about 2 years old. What's important about this can?
Well, of course, this can has been changed since you bought it. But the can in its essentials dates back to about 1900. And prior to that, Campbell's was a local canner in the southern New Jersey area that canned a lot of different things and put pictures of those vegetables on the cans. And so they went from these rather evocative cans to a very standardized can. They picked the colors. Actually, one of the executives went to a football game between Penn and Cornell, and he really liked the red and white uniforms that the Cornell players were wearing. And in the center, they put a gold seal that they had won at one of the many international exhibitions for the product. What's important about this soup, or about this can then, is that it really established not a product, but a brand. Now, the reason it's been changed in the last couple of years is that a lot of people are like you. They bought the soup because it's been sold as warmth and security, more than it's been sold in a way as food. And so Campbell's did some surveys, and they found that almost everybody has a few cans of Campbell's soup in their cabinet, but they don't eat it very much, or they don't eat it often enough to keep the sales going. And so what they've done is put some pictures of warm soup on the label so that when you look in your cabinet, more than when you look on the store, you'll think, hey, I can eat this. I just don't have to have this in case of total disaster, but this is something that I can eat.
All right. How about this bottle of Heinz tomato ketchup?
Yeah, well, this is you're an old-fashioned sort of person in that you have the classic glass bottle with the narrow opening that it takes so long to get the ketchup through. Only in the last couple of years have American tastes shifted toward the larger plastic squeeze bottle that it's easier to get the ketchup out. That there's, with packages, there tends in some cases to be a struggle between the sort of iconic package, and this is particularly true of people, for example, who don't eat much tomato soup or much ketchup, that they tend to prefer the iconic package, whereas people who use ketchup in vast quantities are probably going to go for the squeeze bottle.
I keep the ketchup for that rare guest who actually uses it. This is actually maybe an antique. So this is a classic bottle. It, from your book, I get the impression that younger people use the squeeze bottle and older people prefer the more iconic glass bottle.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Okay, let's see. I have two bottles of mouthwash here, both of which you write about in your book. One is Listerine and the other is Scope. What can we learn about packaging by looking at these two bottles and comparing them?
Well, Listerine, of course, this is an interesting case because it's a small plastic version of, actually it isn't, it's glass, sorry. this is a small version of an iconic glass bottle whose logo is done in a typeface that's so styleless that you just know it's good for you. It's the kind of typeface that you'd use for a poison or some such thing. It says Listerine Antiseptic in very, very strong strong letters. And what you're doing with this package, it is in a way punishing yourself. That somehow or other, original sin is involved here. And for if you believe in that, then you're likely to go with Listerine.
I always thought of it as being medicinal, that they wanted to give you the sense that this might not taste good, but it's good for you. It's medicinal. It will kill those germs and make you a better person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was being perhaps a bit over the top on that. But
let's look at the Scope bottle.
You know, Scope came out in the 1960s and was a very popular introduction. And it doesn't say antiseptic. It has a soft form. It has a kind of a characterless bottle, really. And it's green, which in the kind of simple-minded way that package designers, but perhaps consumers, think, green is like a green light. There's a certain amount of, it's okay. You know, that bad breath is part of life. You know, you do it, and then you go out and do whatever you have to do. It's not a punishment. It's permissive.
You trace the first packaging to drugs and cosmetics. What kind of items?
Well, with drugs, of course, what we take drugs on faith, essentially. And very early on, the makers of patent medicines realized that the shape of their bottle and the distinctiveness of their bottle and the degree of belief that they could create in their bottle was much more important than whatever was inside. Cosmetics, and you could say that the packaging of cosmetics goes all the way back to the ancient Egyptians, that cosmetics are about magic. And one thing that we haven't really talked about with packaging is magic, that there is this quality of that psychologists have found again and again to be true, that the package rubs off on the product and rubs off on the user, that there is an aura. And so if you have a substance that's most supposed to make you look more beautiful or smell more beautiful, you want to have it in a beautiful container. Especially things that are in small containers are more powerful than big containers.
Why is that?
Well, because they're likely to contain something that's precious, that a perfume or some kind of cosmetic is an expensive thing, and so the package that you have it in is more important.
My guest is Thomas Hein, author of the new book, The Total Package. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Tom Hein is my guest, and he writes about architecture and urban design for the Philadelphia Inquirer. His new book is called The Total Package, and it's a history of packaging of consumer items. You reprint this fantastic ad from Unita Biscuits. And this is from, I guess, around the turn of the century when they first started packaging biscuits. I'm going to ask you to read this ad. Tell us something about it and then read it for us.
They really didn't sell the idea that their crackers or cookies were any better than anybody else's, but that because they were packaged, they were cleaner and purer. And so this ad ran in a lot of publications in 1901, and the headline, no pictures actually, the headline on it was, "The Grocer Couldn't Help It." And it goes on, "When the grocery boy swept out the store, he couldn't find the lid of the cracker box, so he covered them over with a codfish crate. After he weighed a mackerel and drew a quart of kerosene, he filled an order for a pound of crackers, which was carefully picked from the cracker box under the codfish crate. The customer who bought the crackers said they tasted queer, but the grocer couldn't help it."
That's a wonderful ad. I wonder if shopping was like that, that your crackers would taste of codfish and whatever else was placed on top of the bin that it was in.
Well, the ad industry at that time was dominated by writers. and they certainly went out of their way to find as many really distasteful things that could be messing up your crackers as possible.
But that was the big thing, I guess, about early packaging, is that it protected the food, and they were selling the protection of packaging in the advertising.
Sure. And, of course, it still does protect the food, and it still does preserve the food. Early packaging, you know, another important case of early packaging was Borden's original condensed milk, which was introduced at a time when there were scandals in New York City about cows being fed the byproducts of the makings of whiskey, and that the milk was adulterated. And when you have a package, you not only protect the milk from dirt, but you also have a kind of investment that you as a seller are identified with the package. You have made an investment in advertising and in machinery and in a delivery system, and you have more to lose. And so there was an element, and still is an element, of trust that gets built into packaging.
Tom Hine is my guest. He writes about architecture and urban design for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's the author of the new book, The Total Package, and it's a history of packaging of consumer items. Do you think that packaging is heading in any new directions now?
Well, I think that it is interesting that there's getting to be less of it. And in fact, some packaging even says less packaging. That's a novel claim.
For environmental reasons.
For environmental reasons.
Cut
and
down
also
on the trash.
To cut down on the trash and cut down on the expense to companies that make the products. In general, of course, packaging is also following the society toward, away from the great mass brands that we're nostalgic about, like Heinz ketchup and Campbell soup, toward a variety of packages that appeal to narrower tastes.
You predict that it's possible there will be even less packaging in the future because we'll be ordering from catalogs and computers, and a lot of things will just be delivered to your home. So they won't be sold on the basis of an attractive package.
Well, I quote somebody saying that. There's been a lot of study of that, because real estate is a very expensive part of the whole merchandising system. And there was one of the big six consulting firms, the big six accounting firms, did a study in Chicago which showed that it would be cheaper for a particular supermarket chain to deliver everybody's groceries than it would be for them to maintain supermarkets. But I also talked to some interesting marketing consultants who said that they thought that would make packaging not less but different.
Mm-hmm.
That when people choose the package in their home, either on TV or computer discs, the package will look more like their home. It won't have to jump so much out in the supermarket, but it will have to fit into their own lives even more securely.
Well, Tom Hine, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Tom Hine is the author of the new book, The Total Package. He writes a syndicated column on architecture and design for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.